Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is a Hat Trick
podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education After School. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, we're here to answer the questions that our listeners sent into us on our anonymous Google form, which they can find in the bio of this episode and the bio of our social media channels. We're at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok and X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Wonderful. Let's get started with the title of this episode and our first question here, which is from that anonymous Google form. Let me just say as well about the anonymous Google form. When you fill it out, Google will ask you for an email, but it's just for Google. We don't see it. It's totally anonymous. And one of those questions we've got here, which says, hello.
Hello.
Do you have an episode about mommy issues? Mommy spelt mommy.
Mommy.
Yeah.
Every episode's about mommy issues, isn't it?
Because of us.
Yeah.
Well, they say, do you have an episode about mommy issues? Every single one. Their cause, how they present in men. Maybe it will help me understand my boyfriend more.
Oh.
What?
I mean, it used to be a bit of a stereotype, didn't it? So men making mother-in-law jokes and women being sad that their male partner was so respectful to his mother.
Right,
yeah. Or lived at home or something like that.
Are you saying here, the way you're interpreting this question and the way that you're interpreting mummy issues is basically saying this person gets on well with their mum, hangs out with their mum loads and is always talking to their mum and can't do much without their mum?
Well, there is that, yes. Mm. There are those people. Sounds quite nice to me. But
yeah.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Sort of guys who hang out with their dads, that's all right. But guys who hang out with their mums is not so all right.
This is why I find mummy issues interesting, because daddy issues, I feel like when we say daddy issues, the idea that I think comes to my mind, and this could well be wrongly, but is a young woman who goes for older men in her romantic relationships and doesn't have a great relationship with her own dad. And that's why you put two and two together. But with mummy issues, I don't think that stereotype is there. And in fact, I don't even know if it is a proper thing that we can talk
about.
It
is a thing, but it bothers me quite a lot. It's not just because I'm a mum. The thing is that I think with daddy issues, people often have missing fathers. So there's very obvious sort of searching for, you know, the male figure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of men have daddy issues as well. The mummy issues thing is much more, in lots of ways, much more pejorative. It's much more about having an overbearing mother, an abusive mother, somebody who's done you wrong.
Mm.
And so in some way, you're looking to put that right. And I mean, it could be that you're just super, super close, overly close, you know, inappropriately close. Or something. Yeah. I mean, you would default to your mum rather than your wife, kind of a thing. All of those sorts of things that go on. And, you know, be round, I don't know, changing her light bulbs and you never change the ones at home. People would say, he's got mummy issues. It's always one, you know, when actually, you know, she might have a bad arm or something.
But you're saying in that scenario, you're saying, yes, they're close. But maybe that's not because they're close. Maybe it's because the child in that scenario is trying to win the favour of the mummy.
Well, some mummies do make their children do parentify, what's called parentifying your child, make their child feel responsible for their mood and for their welfare. And so they feel unnaturally close.
Whoa. Which way round is that? You're saying that the parent parentifies the child.
Oh, yeah. I mean, mummy issues are not caused by the child.
Mm, fascinating.
It's the behaviour of the
parent. So it's a role reversal. The parent then...
Well, in both cases, with daddy issues as well, it's the absence of the dad that makes the child search for the dad and want somebody to replace the dad, if you see what I mean.
But then in that scenario, they're still the child. But in this scenario, what you're talking about is the mummy goes, I am not a mummy no more. Mummy needs mummying herself. And mummy is going to be mummied by Sunny.
Yeah, but it's unconscious. And it's more about somebody, I mean, you know, maybe they have daddy issues. You know, maybe mummy has daddy issues and is missing. her own mummy issues and is missing being looked after in some way. Mm. When you're missing out on anything from childhood, you go searching for it. And then you get these very sort of popular kind of labels like mummy issues, daddy issues. But actually what you're looking for is what you didn't have.
Mm.
But what is a particularly troubling one is when children are treated as though they need to look after the parents. And so they have to be on their mettle, keeping an eye on the parents' moods in case they're in trouble for not meeting their needs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they may often grow up being very close to the parent and feeling that need and guilt about not meeting the needs. And that's presumably what's being talked about here. It's very different from having a parent who lives around the corner and popping around to take the bins out or mow the lawn or something.
Yeah, this is like every day I go to work, I need to make sure I pop by my mum's to make sure if she needs anything done or, you know, at the drop of the hat.
It's not even that you feel the need to check in on somebody, because people will do that with sisters and brothers as well. And they'll do it, you know, they might, grandparents, they might do it with anybody if they feel concerned about someone. But it's more that it's not about feeling concerned. It's feeling that something bad will happen if you don't do it. There'll be repercussions. And that the parent might well be angry. And also, there are things that go with this, like the silent treatment. Is, you know, if you don't do the thing that the parent wants you to do, then they won't talk to you. And you have to go and grovel and apologise and make up for it, that sort of thing. That's the kind of thing that's sort of fairly toxic.
Wow. So then if this is the kind of mummy issues this person is talking about, I guess we've covered, like, you know, do an episode on that, how they present in men. So in this scenario, it would be, is your partner constantly checking in on their mum?
So it's more likely that they'll be a bit fearful and a bit fearful of you too. So if they feel that they have to look after somebody, they may prioritise their mum over you, because this is the very scary one. But they would also probably admit to doing everything wrong and be very apologetic towards their partner as well, because that's what they're used to. Not always, but quite often.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. And so I get, but their cause, you're saying, to answer this person's question as well, their cause is usually the mummy. The mummy has sort of created this scenario.
So sometimes you can have a parent who has lots of needs and these are conveyed to the child, which isn't really appropriate. And I mean, that can happen accidentally, but it can also happen because the parent is considering what they need and assuming that other people aren't meeting their needs deliberately.
Deliberately. Wow. That's interesting. In that case, then, maybe this will help me understand my boyfriend more. What advice do we have for this person based on that, then? I mean, I'd help that we can just say this is what might be going on if this sounds like you, but what else do we send them home
with? It's about realising that you're grown up and that you can create some boundaries. And if you have somebody who really believes that something bad will happen to their mum if they don't look after her or they don't meet her needs or they don't respond to her requests, then you can't just say stop doing it because it just sounds like you're jealous or you're not understanding. But you can say sometimes, do you feel okay about that if you feel she's made an unreasonable demand? Or, you know, start talking about boundaries in your own relationship and boundaries in general. And, you know, maybe they'll cotton on and think, oh, actually, I could apply some boundaries in this relationship too, because sometimes it is unreasonable what's being expected. And if it's been allowed to build up over time, and I mean, it happens in families to some extent or another, in a lot of families, And it's not always mummy. There's sometimes somebody whose needs are always prioritized and everybody dances around them. And you're not allowed to say, you know, that's not really okay what you just did. And, you know, it's like the person that says, I'm losing at Monopoly and tips the board over. And everybody has to say, oh, God, you've upset your dad.
Yeah. You know, but it's that thing of like, you know, don't do that because you'll upset your dad. But then when dad gets upset and dad's just being a complete dick, but it's like, but that's what dad does. And if anyone goes dad, then dad goes, well, you shouldn't have taken Mayfair. You know, Mayfair's mine. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be horrible. But, you know, you sometimes get people who are grown up who behave like children. And you sometimes get mothers who may have had a really tough time and not be able to recognise that they're putting too much pressure on their child or that they're expecting their child to look after them. And it can start really, really early in life. I mean, there are some films of babies of 4, 5, 6 weeks old showing caretaking behaviour already.
What?
Yeah. So you...
In what way?
Well, they kind of...
A reassuring pat on the shoulder?
Well, no. But if their mother seems to be getting upset with them for not interacting, then they will give their mother a big beaming smile and sort of draw her back in.
To win them back.
And then carry on ignoring them.
Would that
just
be...
just enough to keep them on board.
Is that not... In some ways, you know, if that's all they've known... a nurturing mother, would they not just be displaying that back to the nurturing mother because that's
well,
what they
if,
see?
Well, if the mother was nurturing, then...
They wouldn't need to
then,
do that.
Then they would be interacting with them. But it's when they're not interacting with them because that's not what they used to. But the mother expects them to interact with them when they want them to. And then they realise, oh, you know, she requires something from me, so they give it then. But it's not a natural, normal kind of to and fro.
Let me just ask you this though, because there are some people that think daddy issues is, and this is very different. So let's park the actual mummy chat. With that, we've left that behind. I think there's some great stuff in there.
See ya.
So see ya. Pop them in the car. Off they go to the old people's home. So so that's done. That's squared away. We're now going to talk about sex. Because some people will see the word daddy issues and they think daddy issues equals someone who likes talking about, you know, ooh, daddy in the bedroom, that sort of stuff. There are people who talk about mummy in the bedroom. Now, this is straight couples, lesbian couples, I'm sure even some gay couples talk about that. Now, that is a separate thing, but let's say, for argument's sake, that that's what this person is talking about. Is there any more to say on that about its cause and how does it present in people other than it's another short form way of saying you're in charge in the same way as daddy, just being like you're the dominant one in this particular sexual scenario. That's really as far as this goes.
Well, we're now straying into Oedipus complex areas, aren't we?
Now, who's that and what is that?
So Oedipus is Greek, right?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Oedipus... Didn't he accidentally murder his father and marry his mother?
Yeah.
So Freud, who was absolutely obsessed with sex.
Yeah, who we don't like in this parish, do we? Do we? What do we think of Freud?
Well, no, because where would we be without Freud?
The forefather of psychoanalysis. So you're right, we wouldn't be anywhere without him, I guess.
So Freud had a big beard as well. He's very beardy.
Yes.
Yes.
An important point.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Freud banged on about sex quite a bit. Yeah. And he did have a very close relationship with his mother, interestingly. And he said that children go through a phase where boys want to marry their mother and murder their father. Yeah. Girls have an Electra complex, same sort of thing, but it's for their father. That's in straight relationships. But actually, if you're a single parent, you will still want to marry the sex of parent you've got. So boys would, you know, want to marry their father if they had a dad and no mum, and girls would want to. And this holds true across cultures, interestingly. The only thing is that you get it early in life.
Yeah.
And you get your little Oedipus thing, where quite often you'll see kids saying, I want mummy to give me a boiled egg. Go away, daddy. Or... You know, the other way around. They'll attach to one parent.
Yeah.
And then they kind of go through that again when they're, you know, sort of just before puberty. They quite often do that again. But in some cultures, they do it the other way around. And it's the parents that find it difficult to unattach from the children. And it's
right.
And so just before puberty, they'll become very attached to their children and want to spend a lot of time with them and be very upset as they start to individuate and go off on their own.
Yes.
So it can work the other way around as well in some cultures. But the early attachment thing, that's across the board, around the world.
And how does Sigmund Freud or anyone else doing these things, what sort of stuff do they do to analyse children and go, they definitely want to shag their mum?
Well, he was using it as a metaphor, because he also used to talk about boys having fantasies of dads having a giant phallus and sort of beating them in a battle. You know, that you could imagine them, their penises fighting away. So, which is absolutely ludicrous, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
he did a lot of opium, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like to mention that. I just said he had a beard. I thought yeah. Saying he had a beard would make him sound enough of a hippie, you know, to...
Wow. Yeah.
To give the impression.
And a hipster. Yeah.
I said he was beardy, you know.
So. Yeah.
So it's supposed to be a metaphor, and we're supposed to get the idea that people will attach to one parent. Mm. I mean, kids will often say, oh, I want to marry you. They'll say it to their teacher. They'll say it to their friend. They'll say it to their mum. They'll say it. And, you know, if you say, well, mummy's already married to daddy, they'll say, no, you've got to marry me, because they know it means that you're very close and they want to stake their claim on their attachment figure. Which is completely understandable and a lot more benign than the sexualized
exactly.
kind of way of thinking of it.
Okay, but how then does that link to what we were talking about just now, where people say mummy in the bedroom, people say daddy in the bedroom?
Because Freud started all that off, I think, and it's kind of that, oh, well, if something's really amazing, you go, mummy, you know, that kind of...
Yeah.
Except that's really embarrassing, so don't.
Don't do that, yeah.
But you know, there is that, oh, you know, mummy and daddy, the ultimate. So if you're calling that out, then, you know, this is really amazing, because that's your primary attachments. That's the really important people in your life. So if you're using that in an intimate situation, you're saying, this is really, really important.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he has a lot to want, because we were talking the other day, weren't we, about how he popularized the idea that a female orgasm intercourse is a quote-unquote mature orgasm.
Oh,
so he's got a lot to answer for, basically, and starting this whole mummy and daddy thing, for God's sake.
Yeah, he has got a lot to answer for. But he's very, very interesting. And also, you have to think of it in terms of the culture. I mean, around the time that he was around, he recognized a lot of sexual abuse in clients of his or patients of his who were what he would call hysterical or neurotic or whatever. But the society at the time wouldn't accept that these respectable people were abusing their partners or their children or whoever. And so he was kind of coerced into sort of saying, oh, well, they're fantasizing about those things. So women were pathologized. I mean, this is the reason to get really fuming, because women were pathologized when they actually had been abused. They were pathologized as imagining, abuse that actually did happen.
Interesting. Maybe we should do a deeper dive into him one day.
A deeper dive into Freud. Somebody's going to come and say, how dare you say this about Freud?
Yeah, well, let them come.
I am a fan. You know, I'm not a non...
You are a big fan. When I was a kid, if I had my little toes out, you'd draw Sigmund Freud on my big toe.
You used to draw Freud on your toes.
You did.
I did.
Honestly, going to the beach would be a nightmare, because obviously my toes were out. Mum obviously had her pen out, because you were doing a crossword or you were doing, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, I'd be sat there having my very sandy sandwiches by this point, because I've rubbed them in a sandcastle I'd made. And then you would find a good moment to...
You liked drawing Sigmund Freud.
No, I loved Sigmund Freud on my big toe. Didn't have a clue in hell who it was, though. I thought Sigmund Freud was a character from Sesame Street. I thought he was one of the, like, guys.
Have you seen the oh my God. You know, have you seen the Freudian slippers? Sold by the Freud Museum.
That's
I bought a pair for Gully for his Christmas once. Freud is they're slippers that look like Freud. They've got his little face on. They're lovely.
Yes.
They're really
they're
lovely.
They're great. Yeah. Tell people what a Freudian slip is, just in case they don't know.
When you say something that you didn't mean to say, but that is really, really appropriate. Like if you were saying, for instance, that would say...
Yes.
So, go on.
Well, were you going to think of the same example?
I don't know. Now I'm intrigued.
Well, maybe Freudian slip, kind of what we're talking about here, when you accidentally call your teacher mum.
That was exactly what I was going to say, something like
there
that.
There you go. Yeah.
We are so on the same wavelength. Oh,
simpatico.
Dear.
Exactly. I know that.
Oh, that is a bit spooky. Oh. But yeah, so something like that, where you make a mistake and you say the very thing you didn't mean to say.
Yeah, but deep down in your Freudian subconscious, that is exactly what you were thinking. All right, let's have a little break, have some more questions and more right after this.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Welcome back to The Real Sex Education After School. We have put mummy issues to bed.
Ooh.
Is that fine? Yeah, sorry. Let's have another question so we can move on swiftly. This one is from the anonymous Google form, which is in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. You know them already. We're at the RSC pod everywhere. Here we go. I don't like the feeling of his sperm running out of me after sex. Is it safe to put in a tampon for a couple of minutes to soak it up?
No.
Girl, 20-year-old.
No, just stand up.
What, now?
No, no.
Oh,
after, use a condom.
Yeah.
Or slap on a pad right after.
Slap on a pad, that's a good idea. If you're willing to get rid of an entire tampon just to save some cum dribbling out of you.
Well, I mean, you know, what you're actually going to be doing is you're going to be keeping it inside your vag instead of letting it run out. So
yeah.
I would not want to do that, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it to linger. Too long.
No, that's what I sort of think. I sort of think you want that out of there.
I mean, it does linger. It does hang around. And, you know, it can hang around for days and it goes flying up through the cervix and up into looking for the fallopian tubes and eggs and things. And it can hang around for a few days. So it does. But you don't really want to sort of leave a smelly old tampon inside you. Ugh.
Well, but what if you're only doing it for a few minutes? I just don't like the feeling of a sperm running out of me after sex.
It'll still run out, though,
for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, but you just, because it'll be hiding behind the cervix. It'll be, you know, lurking all over the shop. So the best thing you can do, what do people do when they're trying to get pregnant? They lie on their back and put their legs in the air. Gravity, make it go in. So just stand up or kneel up on the bed. Let it flow.
Yeah, but then it's going to run. It's going to. I don't like the feeling of his sperm running out of me after sex.
If you put a pad,
so that's not going to make it.
Hold a pad there tightly. It's not going to feel as if it's running because it'll just be blobbing straight onto the pad. It'll just be absorbed immediately. I mean, if you have to wear a tampon, I just wouldn't advise it.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing, of course, is you can wear a condom. There is this thing called a condom which stops the sperm coming out in the first place.
That is actually a really good idea.
That's what I'd go for.
I think that's a really good idea, actually. Think about that one.
But how we suffer. You see how women suffer.
Yeah. Well, But also, listen, I learned about toxic shock.
And now,
you know, so putting... I mean,
that's the thing. That's why I don't like the idea.
Just explain what toxic shock is for there'll be a lot of guys, I think, listening to this being like, what's that?
Well, no, I mean, sometimes, you know, leaving a tampon in for very long and for some people, not very long at all, can cause a sort of sepsis where you get a really nasty all over infection.
Yeah.
That's very
people
serious.
Have died.
People die. Yeah.
Yeah.
From leaving a tampon in too long. I mean, sometimes people, for some reason, I don't know how they manage it, but they get a tampon caught behind the cervix or something like that, don't realise it's there, and then get really, really ill.
Can you hear that? That is, you know, half of our listenership freaking out.
That's
right
just
now.
The switching off the sounds of devices being
terrified.
Turned off.
Yeah. Guys, I'm sure you're safe, but just be very careful.
Yeah, change your tampons regularly.
And don't put a tampon in for a reason like this. I'm gonna say that. I just think it really is. It's a waste of money, if anything, because we all know there's a tampon tax. So, you know, don't waste it on this. Okay, Here we go. Another question here. Hi, I desperately need to know what is happening to me. I think I'm bisexual. I, though, had figured it out by now, I thought. Sorry, again, reading verbatim. But now I don't know anymore. I get excited and watching straight or gay porn. I masturbate watching both or thinking of a guy slash girl. But when it comes to real life, I can't get hard with guys, no matter how hot I think they are or no matter how relaxed I'm. I have tried changing the way I masturbate. I usually masturbate on my stomach with my bed sheets, but nothing has changed. I'm afraid this will happen with a girl because the last guys I've met were comprehensive. I don't think a lady will understand. 20 years male bi? Question mark?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily from the sound of it. I mean, being identified with the people that you're watching in porn is probably what's making you aroused because you identify with their pleasure. Mm. And it's fantasy. It doesn't mean you necessarily want to do what they're doing. I mean, there's loads of people who are straight and fantasize about sex with the same sex or, you know, horrific pain, rape, sex with elephants, kangaroos. You know, they wouldn't want to do it in real life. Not that there's anything wrong with being bisexual. There is something wrong with having sex with an elephant. Very, very much wrong.
Yeah, that is wrong.
Because it's cruel to the elephant. They can't consent. But other things, it's a fantasy. You're just imagining it. We have that ability to fantasize to help us along with sex, actually. There are some theories that that's why women are more likely to empathize with people having gay sex, male or female or anything else.
Yeah.
And men maybe do that a bit less because they perhaps don't have that same empathy. But there's no reason why they shouldn't, and lots do. And so none of this says anything about your sexuality at all.
Yeah, you could well still be bi. I'd sort of
feel
like...
Yeah, you could be, or gay.
But what I mean is, I sort of feel like what you're romantically and sexually attracted to, for me, is how I would feel about... So if I was in your case, I probably would think I'm bi. If I'm getting to this scenario where I'm masturbating over guys and girls, I'm attracted to guys and girls when I'm out and about, I'm flirting with them, I'm getting with them, I'm getting into a scenario where I'm about to or having sex with them, for me personally, I would say I am bi. Just because I couldn't get hard, despite the fact that I was turned on in the moment, wouldn't change my own understanding of my sexual identity.
That's very true, because it might well be that the situation causes you anxiety and that's why you're not getting your erection. Exactly. It may be because you want it so much that you're not getting your erection. But I think you need more relaxed sexual experiences where you can experiment and find out what you do like. Because there are also, you don't have to be bi or straight either to like what you like. I mean, there are an awful lot of straight men who have sex with men and don't identify as bisexual or gay. They are just men who have sex with men because that is just a sexual interest. It is not a romantic or prevailing.
Erotic.
It's not erotic. It's just something that they do.
Similarly with straight women who watch gay porn, straight women who get with other women, that sort of stuff.
But again, there's no reason why straight women shouldn't have sex with other women and still identify as straight because that's what they do. You just hear more about men doing that. It's just talked about more, I think.
Okay, great. Let's have one final question. Here we go. I've been seeing a girl recently and found out she has genital herpes. Nothing has happened yet, but we've talked about it a bit. I'm really just not sure what to do. Or I guess what I can do. Is there anything that I can do to reduce the risk to myself or generally things that I should know before making any decisions? 21, male, from the US.
It's difficult with herpes because it can lie dormant for a long time. So you may already have herpes and not know.
Yeah, it could be symptomless.
Yeah, and sometimes people with symptomless herpes give it to somebody else and that person then develops herpes. You accuse them of sleeping around and it's actually you who's given them the herpes. That I've known that to happen with people a few times. But the problem when herpes is active is that it is shedding all over the genital area, so around the pubic area, all over. So wearing a condom is obviously advisable, definitely advise that. That's very
always
helpful.
Yeah.
And a femidom, actually, if you've thought it was active, but maybe you'd want to anyway, that still won't cover everything. So you can kind of pass it on that way. You can also pass it on through oral sex.
So if you have oral sex with someone that is shedding at that point, or
who's shedding or has an outbreak.
You know what's interesting about herpes as well is that because it for so many people is symptomless, and I believe for so many people is harmless for a lot of people, and so many people have it. It is genuine. The results, particularly funny enough, in America, a lot of these studies are done in America, and some of them range from 50% of adults to 80% of adults have it. And it's a really interesting thing because it's so contagious, and because it's symptomless and all that sort of stuff, it's so hard to stop.
Well, it's not always hard to find. It's not always symptomless.
No, of course.
If you have an outbreak, it's really unpleasant. Yeah. The first outbreak is usually the worst, and people don't, or unless they're immunocompromised in some way, people don't usually have as bad an outbreak as they do the first time again. But the first one can be just awful. And if you're pregnant, you're more likely to have an outbreak. And then there is the fear of infecting the baby as well. So that's, as it's born. So that's a difficult one.
I'm just sort of saying it to say, like the example that you gave where someone has herpes, doesn't know they have it, give it to someone else, they get it, and then they go, oh, you've been sleeping around. This is what I mean. It's so hard to work out what's going on here. It's herpes is a really interesting one in that sense. So all I guess we can say is, keep wearing a condom, keep being safe.
You can say more than that. You can say, talk to your girlfriend about it. And, find out what she thinks. But, she's told you, that she's not keeping this a secret.
Yeah, so, which I think is good.
Yeah, of course. This is consensual. If you have sex with her, it's because you want to do it. I would say it's sensible to wear a condom. And, and to be as careful as you can. But, she will probably know when she's likely to be having an outbreak, because you get a sort of tingling beforehand. So she will probably know the pattern of outbreaks, what's more likely to make her have one, when she feels stressed. Even if she's not having an outbreak, maybe she'd be shedding. So just be a bit more careful.
There are
dating groups for people who have herpes, who want to date other people with herpes if it really bothers you a lot. But just take precautions.
Absolutely. But I just want to say for people out there who, because you might be listening to this and be freaking out, because it can be really bad news, but it's so common and that they don't even really test you for it for a lot of cases, because they're just like, what's the point? Because it's almost in a lot of places, it's going to lie dormant. And also in lots of cases, they think it's going to be symptomless, lie dormant, and be harmless. And in a lot of places in America, they assume you've already got it.
But if you do have an outbreak, definitely go and get it looked at.
Because, 100%, absolutely, yeah.
Because you get little tiny red bumps that then turn into blisters, and it's like having chicken pox.
And
very, very unpleasant.
Not pleasant.
And then they can break and weep and get infected, and you do not want that.
But I think that's really good advice about talking to your partner, working out what their level of outbreak is, if they have outbreak, or somehow they just know that they've got it, but
they probably know their cycles really, really well, and what's likely to happen and what isn't. And some people have one outbreak, never have another one.
Yeah, there you go. It's a really, really fascinating one, that one. And does offer up loads of moral conundrums and ethical stuff, and I've read so much online about it. But maybe that's a conversation for another day and a deeper dive. And that is one to look forward to. So do subscribe.
Oh, God.
Do follow. What? You can look forward to that. I think we should definitely do an episode on that.
A deep dive into herpes.
Yeah, lovely. Exactly. That's the title. We've workshopped that really quickly.
Herpes. That's brilliant. Yeah,
that sounds great. Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. Keep those questions coming in. As I say, the anonymous Google form in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. We love them. We're going to answer them all. Thank you so much for them. And we will see you next time on Monday. For some more Real Sex Education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton.
The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.